Mike Braun says no to state budget help. Indiana paralyzed over CARES Act money. Plus, Jennifer McCormick endorses Democrats and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending September 18th, 2020.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Indiana U.S. Senator Mike Braun said he'll be disappointed if the federal government provides any financial support for state and local government budgets in future COVID-19 relief packages. State budget officials project Indiana will have a $1 billion hole in its budget by the end of the current fiscal year, even with the state's significant financial reserves. They've repeatedly asked for federal help, including by loosening restrictions on existing federal CARES Act funding. That's in part why the state still hasn't spent more than half of that money, although that's not what Mike Braun thinks.
I think we're sitting on all the money that was given to us by the federal government because we have not had to use it.
Asked directly why Braun doesn't support the kind of help Governor Eric Holcomb and state officials have requested, he said this.
We will make it through it based upon how we've lived our life in a responsible way as a state government.
The governor has already cut higher education funding and asked state agencies to slash their budgets by 15%. Why is Senator Braun opposed to something that state leaders are asking for? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanes, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Lindsay Erdody, state government reporter for the Indianapolis Business Journal. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Mike O'Brien, Governor Holcomb says he's talked with Braun, including very recently. Is Braun not listening?
Well, I think Mike Braun knows as well as anybody, because he served in the state legislature, the state of the finances for the state of Indiana and the great position we were in to deal with this crisis on the front end. So he knows that, and he's clearly in his comments that we just heard. He's clearly proud of that fact that the state properly managed its finances and responsibly so over the last several years and was able to absorb these losses. But and this isn't just an Indiana problem now. This is a national problem. There are pots of money sitting all over the place. These former CARES Act or the CARES Act dollars that were first distributed. You only buy so many masks and face shields, you know. And so the original guidance from the federal government was that these CARES Act dollars had to be used for things that were directly COVID related, but state government is state agencies that have nothing to do with COVID directly are still hurting because of the environment that we're in. And that's why Governor Holcomb and governors across the country are asking for flexibility and using these remaining dollars to augment budgets that have been cut directly related to the crisis.
Yeah. We're going to talk a little bit more about that CARES Act money in a little bit. But Ann Delaney, this event that Mike Braun was speaking at, or this virtual press conference, was put on by ALEC and FreedomWorks, and the subject was that they are opposing what they're calling bailouts of state and local government budgets. They focused on blue states for the most part, but of course Indiana is a red state that will need some help too. Would it be a bailout to provide Indiana and other governments across the country with support as the economy has crashed because of COVID-19?
You know, we still have more than 200,000 people unemployed in Indiana. We have rents that aren't being paid. We have landlords that have mortgages that need to be paid to the banks that lent them. And we're sitting on all of this money. It's interesting to me that the approach that Senator Braun takes is no aid to state and local governments. I mean, you could make an argument that he and Mitch McConnell are the ones defunding the police, because a lot of this money is going to go to help state and local officials pay local employees, which include police and fire, and teachers. I mean, that's another thing we're not doing. It's incredible to me that we're sitting on this amount of money when people are hurting as badly as they're hurting, and the governor can't get up off his whatever and do something about it. And I think that's pretty frustrating.
Lindsay Erdody, the state budget officials and the governor have been pretty clear about what they're asking for a while now, have they not?
Yeah, I think it's interesting to note, though, that they have not necessarily been asking for more money. They have been asking for an expansion of what they can spend the money on and an extension of for how long they can use the money. Because, you know, right now they have to spend it by the end of the year. And they're saying expenses are going to continue into 2021. We want to be able to use the money through that time. Senator Braun's comments are a little bit interesting because they seem focused on not wanting to send states and local governments more money, but that's not exactly what Indiana has been asking for just yet.
John Schwanes, I suppose it's easy to spin the line, you know, no bailouts for blue states or no bailouts for Illinois, who's misspent their finances for years and years and years. But does this sort of stance hurt Mike Braun with his own constituents?
You know, I wonder what would happen, what Mike Braun, his stance would be if, in fact, he were on the ballot this fall. You know, when you're not up for election, you can be emboldened by your courage. I think it could come back to haunt him. The calculation is clearly that by doing this now, you can be seen as the fiscal steward. You can be seen as the champion of smart accounting and get after that debt and let's be good fiscal stewards. The problem is, of course, that now that he's on record opposing this bailout, as he calls it, in a crisis, every time he advocates any sort of assistance, whether it's for individuals or businesses in the future, I can see people saying, gee, why are you comfortable with this sort of quote-unquote bailout, but back when people were really struggling and they didn't have money to put food on the table or they were facing eviction, you didn't seem so willing to loosen the purse strings then. So there's a certain, I think, there's a political calculation here. He's not on the ballot, but there's a risk to it with those kinds of comparisons long-term.
Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, will any future COVID relief packages from Congress include financial support for state and local governments? A yes or B no. Last week, we asked you if you want your employer to participate in President Trump's payroll tax deferral program. Only 11% of you said yes, 89% said no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, speaking of what we just talked about, a senior Indiana budget official says the state is somewhat paralyzed by conflicting directives from the federal government over how it can spend COVID relief dollars. The Trump administration continually sends guidance to the states over how they can spend federal CARES Act funding, but that can often confuse more than it helps. State Office of Management and Budget Director Chris Johnston says, for example, the U.S. Treasury sent updated guidance at the end of August. The Treasury's Inspector General also sent guidance a few days later that didn't match.
Fear the Inspector General that comes out to your state and says, give me all your documentation of why you made this decision, has sort of put a little paralysis out there in people's minds.
The state has earmarked less than half of the $2.4 billion it's received in CARES Act funding, and it's actually spent less than 10% of the total. Democratic Representative Greg Porter says, conflicting guidance or not, the federal government requires CARES Act money to be spent by the end of December.
I'm just trying to figure out how much money we're going to have left, how much money we might potentially have to revert back to the federal government.
Johnston says he's hoping for clearer guidance soon. Ann Delaney, can we really blame the state for holding back on spending some of these dollars?
Oh, I think we can. I mean, the idea that you're going to get clear guidance out of that corrupt and absolutely incompetent administration is ridiculous. You go, you spend the money in the way that's consistent with the way the law is laid out. And you can do that, okay? The idea that they're going to come back, the Trump administration, and start looking at scandal is ridiculous. I mean, they can't even criticize Seema Verma for wasting $6 million of taxpayer money to make herself look good. I mean, if that's not a misexpenditure, I don't know what is. But these kinds of things, it seems to me, are the excuse that they're using for not spending the money, in the hope that rather than helping the people who need it so much, they can bail the state out later on when the state can continue to roll back corporate taxes and the other things that they've done on the Republican watch. And it's just not, it just doesn't make any sense. The money is there to help people. They ought to use it to help people. That is a defensible position should the Trump administration ever get its act together to come back and look at corruption. But since they haven't looked at any of their own, I don't think that's likely to happen.
Well, mark corporate taxes off on your bingo cards at home. Mike O'Brien, we just talked about how the state is waiting because we're hoping for some of that flexibility on how we can use the CARES Act money. But it is mid-September, and while we hope the deadline to spend these dollars gets pushed beyond December, we don't know that it will. So how much longer can this essential game of chicken go on?
I don't know. I mean, it's not a joke to misspend it. You know, it's illegal. So I think the state is being what they always have been. They're being conservative and trying to be good stewards with these dollars, knowing there's not another. The pipeline is not full of money that's going to be showered across Indiana. So this is like we've got one-time money to figure out how to make as many people whole as we can. But they need instructions on whether or not they can do that, or we have to give it back, or we get penalized for it. This isn't like just some theoretical exercise where they're going to go spend it on, you know, redoing the governor's office. You know, I mean, this is like they get very clear guidance on what they're able to do with this money and not do. And they'd like that list expanded so they can do the things that Ann's talking about. I'm not disagreeing with rent assistance and all the like. But if they say you can't do that with the money, you don't just get to flip your nose at it and go do whatever you want.
Lindsay or Doty?
They've already done it for rent, and they could quadruple or quintuple what they've done with that. And they won't even do that.
Lindsay or Doty, I want to go to you on this because you've been following these budget committee meetings throughout the process and how the state is spending these COVID dollars. And I think another thing we learned this week was not that they, yes, continue to get conflicting guidance, but also they haven't even sent out dollars that they have planned to spend for the things they know they can spend it on, right?
Right. Yeah, that's correct. I mean, I think in your intro you said it's less than 10% right now. And one of the examples of that I'm trying to find out more information on is the small business program. It's a $30 million program meant to help small businesses, and less than $1 million has been granted to small businesses through that. And so they're looking at that and trying to think, okay, do we need to change the guidelines for who could apply for that? Or what is holding small businesses back from being interested in that, or holding us back from being able to send out these grants? And that's just one example of one of the programs. But to both, you know, Mike and Ann's points, there are, like that program, other programs they've implemented that they know they can spend the money on now. And some of them, like the housing assistance program, is very popular and in high demand. So they could always put more money into that, and they know that is an acceptable use.
John Schwanes, I always seem to go to you with this question, but citizens, constituents, voters, if they're going to focus their anger here on someone, is it going to be the state government or the federal government?
Gee, I don't know. When it comes to government, people seem to have a lot of anger to go around.
That's true.
So there's enough for everybody. You know, there are two issues here. There's the let's look at the letter of the law, and let's look at sort of the legal approach here. Yes. We can all applaud any government official who wants to adhere to statute in the spirit of a statute, and that's good government. We appreciate that. Now let's dispense with that and talk about the political realities here in this crisis. I think as a practical matter, if this money were spent in ways that might be, you know, somewhere on the line over, you know, maybe an inch over into non-COVID uses, I don't think there would be any real ramifications for the state. And I'll tell you why. A lot of other states have already spent the money in this way. And if you look at any kind of retribution or enforcement, if the Trump administration, if Donald Trump wins another term, I don't think he necessarily and his administration would see have much enthusiasm for going after a Republican state led by a Republican governor who has been generally supportive of his administration. And if Joe Biden wins, I don't think he has any appetite for being seen as the ogre that's going after a state that tried to help its citizens in a crisis. Right. So I think how we can debate, you know, what legal and permissible. As a practical matter, spend it. I don't think there's any downside. I mean, any practical downside or retribution down the path.
Now, that is a gamble to take, though. State Superintendent of Public Instruction Jennifer McCormick, a Republican, has been endorsing Democrats the last couple of weeks, including Attorney General candidate Jonathan Weinzapple.
In a statement, Dr. McCormick says her decision to endorse Weinzapple isn't about politics. Rather, she says the former Evansville mayor has a, quote, well-earned reputation for bipartisan problem-solving, for listening, and for making a real difference in every job he's had. McCormick is also publicly backing three Democrats in state legislative races, including the challenger to Republican Speaker of the House, Todd Houston. The state superintendent, who can't run for re-election after the General Assembly made the position appointed rather than elected, previously endorsed Democratic Senator Eddie Melton for governor last year during the primary.
And we just learned a little while ago today that Dr. McCormick is now endorsing Dr. Woody Myers, the Democratic candidate for governor. So, Lindsay or Doty, because anytime we have a Republican endorsing Democrats or vice versa, Democrat endorsing Republicans, that's a little more notable than a lot of other endorsements. But because of the Republican in question, are these as interesting as normal?
Well, I think if you're a voter and you agree with her on education policy, you might be somewhat influenced by the endorsements that she's making. I do think the endorsements she's making in some of these state house races, you know, you mentioned Speaker Houston's race. There's a state Senate race, Senator Ruffelhaus's seat in the Indianapolis area. She's endorsed his opponent in that race as well. And like you just mentioned, the endorsement in the governor's race, I think all of those are a little bit more interesting because those are positions that are having, I think, more direct influence over education policy in the state than, say, the AG would. But again, I do think if you're a Republican voter, her position in these races may not be as influential because you're already looking at her and upset about, you know, her tagging along with Senator Melton last summer.
Yeah, John Schwann, as I mentioned, the Republican in question here when it comes to analyzing these endorsements, she has not been in lockstep with a lot of her fellow Republicans, at least at the state level, through almost her entire term in office. So, A, is it a surprise, and B, is it that influential that she's endorsing these folks?
I don't think it's a surprise. I mean, if you go back and look at her record as a voter and as a citizen prior to her successful bid for office, she was at times in her life a Democrat and voting in that party. So, I mean, there's a history there. I don't think that anybody should be shocked, certainly not given the earlier endorsements and some of the positions she has taken regarding school choice versus what she would prefer, which is robust support of public education and perhaps a scaling back of the state's rather ambitious school choice program. And I think Lindsay makes a good point, but I guess I would suggest this. If you're already a zealous defender of public education and a critic of school choice as it's practiced in Indiana, my guess is this doesn't make so much difference because you're already aligned with the candidates she's advocating, whether or not she's endorsing them at this point. I mean, if you feel that passionately about that issue, I think your choice already clear.
Yeah. Mike O'Brien, these endorsements were about policy and not politics, which is what I think everybody who makes an endorsement says for the most part. But she obviously doesn't have a future in the state superintendent's office, at least it doesn't seem that way, with that position obviously becoming appointed. So what is this about? If it is about politics, which I'm guessing is what you would say, what politics is she trying to go after?
I think she's been angry at Republican leadership now for going on 3 years or 4 years. She was opposed to the appointment of the superintendent of public instruction, which was a bipartisan effort for two decades to get that done. I think she's going after the governor. She's going after the attorney general's office. She's going after the speaker of the house. I mean, she's going after the Senate Republicans' number one seat. It's transparently political, and it's meant to stick it in the eye of Republican leaders on our way out the door, and she's bitter about it. And I think that's as complicated as that this is.
And Delaney, is it that simple? And let me put it this way. Do voters perceive it that way?
I don't think so. Who better, who knows more about education policy than the person who's worked with this Republican administration for the last 4 years? I mean, she knows what their positions are on public education. She is a public education advocate. They are not. And what she is saying is that they're, what they say in some of their ads that I've seen and what they actually do are not the same. They do not support public education the way she wants it supported and the way most people, the 93% of the parents and students in the state that are participating in traditional public education, want to see that support. And so she's saying, don't trust them, because I've worked with them for 4 years and I know that they don't support public education. And I think people that are not political are going to look at that and say, she is in a position to know, and we have trusted her for 4 years and we should listen to her.
Well, Governor Eric Holcomb says he talked with the presidents of Purdue and Indiana University ahead of the decision to resume Big Ten football this fall. The athletic conference announced this week it plans to allow its 14 football teams to begin play in late October. Holcomb says he offered IU President Michael McRobbie and Purdue President Mitch Daniels the state government's support in whatever decision they made.
But I wanted them to know that we are here and we have a lot of talent and a lot of expertise and we're here to help.
Holcomb notes he didn't tell the university presidents whether he thought they should resume play. John Schwanes, you're a Big Ten parent yourself. Are you concerned about the Big Ten's reversal and its decision to play this fall?
Actually, I cannot wait to watch Big Ten football. Let's throw all the public health considerations out of the window. I'm a fan. I've been looking forward to it. I'm supposed to be up in Madison 2 weeks ago for the opener against the IU's opener, as if there's any other opener against Wisconsin.
It's probably better you were spared that.
Well, that's I could have gone and still had some beer, I guess. But there's risk, but there is a school of thought articulated by some other Republican governors who have said that when you put athletes on the field to do what they're supposed to do, there is a discipline and a structure that is good. That actually a lot of sort of the partying atmosphere and the unauthorized exchanges of people's breath is perhaps happening in the absence. And be careful now. Is happening in the absence of the kind of structure. So, it's going to be controlled, tightly controlled, daily testing. Fans will at least not initially not be allowed. Yeah. So, I'm happy. Again, I'll throw all caution out the window here.
Hearing the discipline and this is good for these athletes is to me a compelling argument for why it's good to get back to this sport. But Lindsay, if you're a fall sport athlete who doesn't play football and you still don't get to start your season, are you a little more angry today than you were last week?
I mean, I think you might be, yeah. I think you also might be upset if you're someone who's struggled to get testing or who's wanted widespread testing in other ways, and all of a sudden Big Ten football teams can get daily tests available, almost overnight. It's there. I've seen people questioning that the same way they questioned it when the NBA could do it or any of the other professional sports could do it. And I think the one thing to mention to John's point about, being structured and safe is that the difference with the college sports side of things and the pro athletes side of things is that the pro athletes were able to be in a bubble, totally enclosed from anything else going on versus, these football players are on a college campus and they can go out and, they're going to class, they're doing all sorts of different things. And you are not in that same bubble. And some of these colleges have had some outbreaks.
Yeah. All right. Well, finally, speaking of football, the NFL season got underway for most of the league this week. The Colts fell short in their opener, while my and Mike O'Brien's Chicago Bears somehow managed a stunning comeback victory over Lindsay's Detroit Lions. Anne Delaney, what is more likely, the Colts making the playoffs this year or the NFL being able to finish its full regular season at all?
You only asked that question so you could put the Bears comment in it.
Yes.
Brandon.
Accurate.
And we know that.
That is
Bears.
100% accurate.
And I don't appreciate it, Brandon.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, having you on this week, Lindsay, was just serendipity.
You ought to be a Hoosier. Hmm?
Mike O'Brien, what do you think? Are the Bears going to make the – what's more likely, the Bears making the playoffs or the NFL being able to complete its regular season?
I think they're both really likely. I mean, back to the previous topic, I think – I understand the criticism of the sports teams that get to do this, but they're also developing protocols and tests and technology and procedures that now can be used in other places. And so I think we've learned a lot in the last few months of some of these – you know, baseball is gone, and the NBA has done a great job of it, yeah. And hopefully the NFL can figure it out through February.
And a shout out to the NW and a shout out to the National Women's Soccer League, who was the first league to complete an entire tournament under COVID. So that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Lindsay Erdodi of the Indianapolis Business Journal. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR. Or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Stay safe, stay healthy, wear a mask, and join us next time because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.